Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop, offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson. Thomas, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be back on.
Let me play a little clip here from NBC 26 and the Fox Cities the other day about Appleton-coated paper.
And hundreds of jobs are coming back to the Fox Valley. That's thanks to the addition of a third machine that Appleton coated. Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson says this is a sign of the workers' perseverance.
So this is a huge success. It's a great story. We're at this point right now because the workers persevered. The workers and their families, they took a chance on Appleton Coated. And what's exciting about this announcement is that it's finally beginning to pay off.
The company says around 300 employees will be coming back to work.
Other than the noisy car in the background as you were filming that.
That was my neighbor.
This is good news.
It's great news. I mean, this is a classic David versus Goliath story. You just don't hear about these stories. And because of that, at the Green Bay Labor Council breakfast a couple months ago, I made the point and got a lot of head nodding from a lot of our friends in labor that, you know, this is quite possibly the biggest labor victory in the last 10 years. Now, I understand the context, and this has been, pretty tough last 10 years, though. But this is old school labor. You know, this is when workers had to get together and fight. Once upon a time it was, or not just once upon a time, though, usually it's been for rights, collective bargaining and so forth. But we're at the point right now in our economy here in Wisconsin, as well as manufacturing across the country, where we have to fight just to keep the lights on. If you go back to last September, Appleton Coated, the workers, management, the community for that matter was basically told, look, this is not going to work out. We're going to direct you to workforce development and we're going to find jobs elsewhere. But enough workers organized by the steel workers, led by Denny Lauer, Mike Bolton, John Geenan, Sarah Geenan, we pulled Appleton Coated back from the brink. And today, we don't have all 600 jobs back, but we do have 300 jobs back. We have all three machines going. And we did this slide by ourselves, on our own, without the state. Not a single nickel was spent by the state to reopen us.
How did you convince a judge not to turn that plant into a scrap heap the way New Page is now? That's nothing but a pile of rubble, and one of the Kimberly-Clark plants is a pile of rubble. How did you convince a judge to create a window of room to find a buyer for that?
Well, I think in one respect it was a challenge, but looking back, it wasn't that hard. We talk a lot about the justice system, and there's some opinions out there that there are some downsides for electing our judges. And this is a really good example about why we elect our judges. This was an Outagamie County judge, a local boy who grew up in the community that knew the importance of paper. And I think it's because he grew up in the county, because this was decided here in Outagamie County, that we were able to make, I thought, a very persuasive and convincing argument to give us a second chance. And that's exactly what he did. We've talked about the receivership law in this program a couple times before. It is unique to Wisconsin, and it is basically a very severe, draconian version of bankruptcy, where instead of continuing operations unimpeded, this leads to the immediate shutdown of operations, which for a paper mill can be life-threatening because you have to keep a mill going. That's very expensive machinery. It takes a lot of time and money to start up again, to say nothing about the risk of losing customers. And so we were able to get a reprieve. The judge allowed us, or the company, the current buyer, to find a second buyer to run it. In the meantime, they slowly began to turn one machine on, the second and the third, with the objective not just to make paper, but as a proof of concept to show that a traditional white grade mill could be retrofitted and transitioned to brown grades, which is exactly what they did.
So they're still making regular paper, but they're going to be transitioning. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, so there's a couple machines. I think two of the three machines can do both white and brown grades. There was a successful transition for, I think it was, number one and number six. Number seven does, I believe, exclusively white grades as far as right now. One of the reasons why they continue to do white grades is Apple Encoded carved out a niche in the market where they basically have the recycled paper textbook market. They basically own that market, and they've done very, very well. And so it wasn't a surprise that after the mill restarted again, despite being, I think, a couple of weeks or maybe a month, they got back a lot of their customers because of the reputation they had for producing a good product, reliable, and so forth. So they still have enough customers in that market, but not enough to keep it going. And so that's why it was important to do the transition to brown grades. So right now they're doing both brown grades, liner board, as well as the white grades, predominantly recycled paper for textbooks.
If these workers had not been unionized, if they didn't have the United Steelworkers representing them, would this plant be open today?
Appleton Coated would have been a scrap heap by Christmas. There's no question about that. Because they went in receivership, management was in no position. They did not, they just were not able to object to the sale. However, the workers, because they were organized and they were their own entity, they had clear standing to object to the decision. And that is really the only reason why Appleton Coated was able to be given a reprieve and why they had a second chance. If they had not been organized, the steel workers had not been there, if Mike Bolton, Denny Lauer, John Geenan, and Sarah Geenan did not make the decision, the choice to challenge the sale, those 300 workers would not be at work. Appleton Coated would be a scrap heap.
Well, I'm wondering whether you think there's a precedent for this as a model for other situations around the state, and why wasn't the state more involved in helping keep this plant open? And my third question is, we have we have the Bonton Corporation, and as we record this podcast, it's up in the air whether this offer that's being made for the stores throughout the state, for Yonkers and Boston stores to remain open, Herberger's to remain open. I just think of all the possibilities where, employees come together and say to a judge, look, the community's harmed by these being liquidated. And today's kind of fish and cut bait date for that. And that's a lot of workers. That's 3,000 workers in the state, 2,000-3,000.
That's right. That's right. And that's a big reason why I do these podcasts and I try to tell the story as often as I can, because you're exactly right, Clyde. Go to your first question. This can and should be a model. As far as I know, talking to John Dean and Mike Bolton, this is rarely attempted, and I don't think there has been an instance where it was successful. So we went against the odds, and we beat the odds. And that's why I talked about when this was announced a couple weeks ago, that this was nothing short of a miracle. But we showed that this could happen. There's no reason why other businesses can do this again. Now, that brings up a question. Do all businesses, are they all in a position to challenge, to object to these sales if you do not have an organized workforce? I don't know the answer to that question. What I do know, because Appleton Coated was organized and because the steelworkers' leadership and the workers decide to challenge the ruling, it is now open. So there's no reason why this cannot be used as a model for other businesses. But I should also say, too, even though this could be used as a model, this is also a really clear and convincing case why we have to get rid of the receivership law in this state as it applies to businesses. That is the position the steelworkers took up immediately after this experience, their lobby day in Madison around September, October. And I believe they're going to continue that fight, and hopefully they can build a coalition, because there's a really good case to be made. Now, your second question, I think, was about the state. I have no idea why the governor and local legislators basically abandoned Appleton Coated. They weren't returning phone calls. They weren't engaged. As far as I know, what had happened at some point is the governor and the administration made a decision, made a critical decision, that this was not an economic development issue, but it was a workforce development issue. And so the point of contact was not the Economic Development Corporation, wasn't a personnel within the administration that were trying to figure out a strategy to reopen Appleton Coated. They'd basically given up on the workers on Appleton Coated and were more focused on trying to get them new jobs. And we know that's the case because up until, I think, the first week of February, the message from the governor's office was, look, we've got plenty of jobs in Northeast Wisconsin, around the state. You can get one of those jobs. That's good enough. In my book, no, that wasn't good enough. There was every reason that we should put every ounce of our energy to fight and to reopen that mill. And I forgot your third question.
Well, I think, I guess I was, you know, taking this current situation with these department stores and thinking if they had some sort of representation, they could be, you know, having some stronger leverage here. If this were to go to some sort of receivership. Now, if Bon-Ton sells to the one group of mall owners, then the stores are going to stay open. But it's kind of, it'll be interesting to see what happens today. Stand by. We'll talk more with Thomas Nelson. He's the Outagamie County Executive here at SliceOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SliceOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SliceOffice.com. We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, great local sponsors like Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, our friends at St. Vincent de Paul and S&R Remodeling. Thomas, let me ask you about what else is going on in the paper industry. You know, there was some talk of making tax adjustments for Kimberly-Clark. That got killed in the state Senate. The Democrats proposed a paper fund. Can you give us a status update on that?
Well, I handed off the idea of the papermaker fund to a couple of local legislators who agreed that it was a good idea and a good strategy, not just to help companies like Kimberly-Clark or Appleton Coated, but to be available to help out other paper mills and plants now into the future. If there's one lesson to take from this, is that this is not a one-off. This was not a matter of one mill shutting down, going to receivership or bankruptcy. It was a series of mills and plants over a 3-4 month period. And it wasn't until the fourth company, Kimberly-Clark, that we finally got the attention of the administration and local legislators.
Yeah, I call him Rip Van Walker. I call him Rip Van Walker because he's been sleeping.
That's right. That's right. So I think a good strategy is to approach this in terms of an industry, and not just a one-off. Had a really good conversation with John Geenan about this, and he used the example of the state of Maine. The state of Maine, about 20 or 30 years ago, was in competition with Wisconsin for being the leader in the paper and pulp industry. And somewhere along the line, the leadership in Maine basically allowed the pulp and paper industry to wither on the vine, and so now it is a shadow of its former self. What we need to do is to learn from that all-too-real example and act on this now. There's absolutely no time to waste. It is not too late, but we have to come up with an industry-wide strategy that is not just going to address the current issues and challenges, but to be forward-thinking, to encourage, to invest in innovation so that plants like Appleton Coated can make the transition from one grain to the next, to go from one market, which is kind of soft, and there are some challenges, to a new market that is growing where there's a lot of potential. We can do that, but you have to have the full-on support of local leaders, business leaders, first and foremost labor leaders, and the state. And with regards to the latter, I don't know if there's enough interest coming from the state on this, or they're not paying attention. Whatever it might be, I'm not going to go too far into motives, but the issues and challenges in the paper industry are real, and we absolutely positively need some kind of leadership to help guide us out of this rut.
Let me ask you this. So for someone who might say, why should the government have to start a paper fund? Why don't these companies just do it themselves? This is a free market.
Well, I think in some cases, as in the case of Appleton Coated, Appleton Coated was not leveraged, highly leveraged, but it didn't have the kind of available cash to make this investment. So the long and the short is a number of these plants and mills just don't have the available cash, in some cases credit, to be able to make this transition. Well, Appleton Coated is a really good example because the reason why they went into receivership is you had an out-of-state bank, PNC Corporation, that just wanted to get out of it. So they took an asterisk in the agreement that said that if the company was in the red 2 concurrent months, that they had the option to call in the note, which is exactly what they did. So there is clearly a deep enough challenge that we have to turn to the public sector, because this is a public good. Having good-paying, family-supporting jobs in our community is a public good, and so I believe it takes some public investment to help them. Now, interestingly enough, I believe, it seems as though at least, that there could be common cause with the workers and management, steel workers, and perhaps the Paper Council, because the Paper Council has been making rounds at the Capitol with the message, from their perspective, we're glad you're paying attention at Kimberly Clark. It's a very important component of the paper industry, but it's not just Kimberly Clark, and it's not just now, that we need to have some sort of support, some sort of strategic plan to address the challenges for the entire industry.
Let me ask you about automation. I know this plant's going to have fewer workers than it once did, about half of them. What can we do to mitigate the damage to the workforce by automation? I know you're always thinking around a couple corners and ahead. Have you been thinking about that?
Well, I think I think one thing that we can do is we can take steps with things that we can control to not make that worse by opposing the bad trade deals that have a big part of putting us in this position, that played a huge role in making this industry so vulnerable. That's one thing we can control and one thing that we should do. Now, what can you do from the state level, from the local level? Obviously not as much as you can at the national level. And that's a really good reason why we have to have a voice like Tammy Baldwin, to have an advocate that understands this issue, who is against the bad trade deals that have hurt industries like the paper industry. And unfortunately, there's just not enough voices in Washington. There's not enough voices here in Wisconsin. We have members of our congressional delegation that are champion NAFTA. Unbelievable. I mean, there are very few states that have suffered more than Wisconsin from NAFTA. So the big thing that we can do to save these jobs, to grow this industry, is to not give up the fight on bad trade deals. They're talking about reviving talks with TPP. That's the last thing that we should be doing.
Right.
This is just really frustrating.
Yeah, the president's
no
got...
No matter...
What the president gives with one hand, with tariffs, and some of the NAFTA renegotiations about wages and some of the content of NAFTA that's being renegotiated right now seems promising. And then Big Agra comes to him and puts a lot of pressure on him, and they start talking about the TPP again. So he's got a very muddled message on this.
Right.
I know he's got some other issues.
In which, you know, Trump has a schizophrenic approach to it. So that's not entirely surprising. It's unfortunate, but it's not surprising.
All right. So this is a big deal for those families. The people that worked there the longest were the ones that had the better chance of being back to work. These are good wages. I don't know if the governor understands that wages and pensions and benefits, you know, a job is not a job is not a job. Working at a convenience store for $14 an hour is not the same as working at this plant.
And I don't think that that's entirely clear to the governor or to a number of legislative leaders. You know, the irony of all of this is, if the governor, if Republican legislative leaders would have taken a page or two out of the jobs and economic playbook from Democrats, I don't think the governor or Republicans in Wisconsin, at least, would be in trouble as much as they are right now. If you look at these baseline economic indicators like unemployment, you would think that happy days are here again, and that there shouldn't be many issues with the governing party, but that's not the case. If they would have taken a couple of ideas from the Democrats that, you know, in total, the underlying theme for these strategies and bills is to put not downward pressure, but upward pressure on wages and benefits, we would have better paying family supporting jobs. And that even though you have low unemployment, you would have people that would have family-supporting jobs that wouldn't have to be working two jobs, that would have not just economic security, but health security, too. But you don't have that.
Well, this is a remarkable story, the Outagamie miracle. It's something where I really kind of want to spread the news with this podcast because workers, you know, I know some people think it's a cliche, but workers united will never be defeated.
That's right. And this is, you know, if ever there was a living, breathing case to show the absolute, undisputable, you know, value of organized labor, it's the Appleton Coded model. And we can use this again and again, and I think we need to spread the word. And the bottom line is moving forward, this is also a really clear, convincing case that the future of manufacturing in this state, in this country, can only be achieved through a real labor management partnership. That's what the Appleton Coded story has told us. And if Democrats and Republicans and independents can appreciate that, respect that, and know the role that labor plays, the future for manufacturing and jobs in this state, in this country, will be bright.
Tom Nelson, Outagamie County Executive. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Good to be back on.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.